I now call this meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to order. My name is Tristan Miller, the saucy sleuth.
I'm Melissa Maley, the spy.
I'm Tyler Riley, cop and a half.
And with us is a very special guest.
Red, Gabby Dunn.
Perfect.
Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners, no one else's, a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/ADCpod and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. There's no matching those books. Download a title free and start listening. You start listening, it's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/ADCpod. All right.
Do you have any recommendations? Anyone for an Audible book? I would love to recommend Gabby's novel, but it is a graphic novel and would not work on Audible.
You gotta look at it.
Yeah.
With your human eyes. Not that I'm still on the same stuff that I was before, which is Junkyard Planet by Adam Minter, which is about the recycling industry. So that's cool.
Excellent. All right. And I just downloaded a couple. And I haven't started listening to them yet.
Well, there you go.
I know. What a resounding recommendation. Stuff, yes.
Yeah. There's a bunch of Agatha Christie. There's a bunch of, you get all of Sherlock Holmes narrated by Stephen Fry. It's a good time.
Oh, that's
you can
right.
have a lot of mysteries over there.
Well, so if you listen to it tonight, stuff. Perhaps it would be a Stephen Fry.
Oh, yeah. Because we're recording on All Hallows' Eve.
All right. So, yeah, that is true.
That's enough of that.
No, it's not.
No, there will be more.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's definitely going to be.
Yes. Today we're talking about a graphic novel written by our guest Gabby Dunn. It's called Bury the Lead. And where did this idea come from, Gabby?
I was a kid reporter. I worked at a newspaper when I was like 14. I was kind of a little precocious, ambitious person. And I try to think back on why I was so into journalism. And I think it was like Lois Lane in Superman. And, yes. I just became obsessed with being a newspaper reporter. And so I went to my like local paper in South Florida and was like, can I have a job? And so then all of high school, I worked as a reporter, at like after school and before school, and, was like, you know, a little like asshole where like a source would call during like American history class. And I'd be like, I have to take this. my teacher would be like, no, you don't. So then when I got to college, I went to Emerson for journalism, and they have a program where you can, intern at the Boston Globe in what they call a co-op, where you're part-time in school, part-time working at the Boston Globe. And so I did that, and I knew that it was a competitive program. And so I was like, if I want to be able to get the job, there were four shifts, and one of the shifts was 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. And I said, well, if I want to get the job, I should say I want the night shift, because nobody wants the night shift. So I was like, yeah, right. I really want the night shift. I'm really like, I really want to do it. And they were like, okay, that's weird. Usually we have to like beg someone to take this, but sure. And so then they gave it to me, and it was 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. for like a year, which is basically the crime beat. And I was 19, and I like lied to my parents. I told them that there was a big photographer with me. If there wasn't, we actually in the book, so it's based on my time at the Globe, but actually in the book, we aged Madison up. So the character that is the young reporter originally in the script, she mm-hmm. was 19 as well, same as me. But we were like, well, we should yeah. have her be able to go to bars. So she's 21 yeah. in the book, but truly in real life, I was like 19. So it's based on some of the stuff that I saw while I worked at the Globe and some stories that happened there, not to me, but to other people. And also like characters are taken from certain people at the Globe. It's really like self-insert fan fiction about my job at the Globe.
I love that. That's so cool. Yeah, that's an awesome way to describe
it. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. As I was reading it, I was noticing that there was so much like good Boston detail, and I don't have, you know, I don't know that much about Boston, but like, I'm like, this is experienced. Yeah. I can absolutely tell. And then I read your bio at the end of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, yes, there we go.
Yeah. Boston.
Yeah. Just your little bio.
Boston's a fun crime town. That's why so many crime things are set there. It is. It's like a town where crimes happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's on the brochure.
Boston.
Yeah, it is.
We somehow had gay marriage, but also are racist? Boston.
It really is a
conundrum.
I'm sorry, have you not been to Black Boston at the Children's Museum?
What? Oh, no.
Black Boston. It's this place in the Children's Museum in Boston where it's like a barber shop and a corner store.
No. That is so rough. Yeah.
And I'm sure at this point, like cardboard cutouts of New Edition.
Yeah. This is what we have. Yeah. It's very confusing. It's also a very segregated place. Each neighborhood is so specific. Mm. I was there with my friend who I write my other novels with, and she had never been to Boston, and we were there on a book tour, and I was like, okay, what kind of food do you want? And she was like, what does it matter? And I was like, because each neighborhood is a specific ethnicity, and there's nothing of another ethnicity in that neighborhood. So if you want Italian food, we have to go to the North End. And if you want, any sort of Latinx food, we got to go to Eastie and like all these kinds of things. And she was like, what? And I was like, welcome to Boston. It's all separated.
Yeah, no, that's really true. It's really even more pronounced. It's more pronounced than any other city. Now that you mentioned it, I hadn't like thought about it before. But yeah, no, that's absolutely true. It's great for crime and
and racism.
History and racism
and ghosts.
A lot of ghosts. Yeah. A lot of ghost
tours. I went on a very good ghost tour there. Yeah.
So why did you want to write a mystery? I mean, you could have just done like a biography sort of thing, which is this, you know, as you said, a self-insert, but why specifically a mystery as opposed to like just, I like journalism and here's a graphic novel.
No, I love a mystery. I mean, I watch procedurals. I love like Law and Order or... I was very into Bones for a hot minute, which is like, what am I like, mom? I don't know. It's like 12.
It's fun. There's
12 seasons of Bones. And I was like, let me zone out for 12 seasons. It's great. If the creator of Bones wants to work together, I love Bones. But I just love like, oh, wow, we started out. Ooh, what's this little piece of evidence? Here we go. Like, I think like that was a lot of what you're doing as a journalist. Like I never wanted to write like a cop show. Don't really care about cops, but reporters do the same thing. Like we were always trying to beat the cops too, to the information. I felt like I was always solving some kind of mystery, or you're trying to put together the story of what happened, or you're truly trying to get the information before the police, or you're trying to trick the police into giving you stuff. Like, and I loved doing it as like when I was working as a reporter, I felt like there was this high of like putting the piece together or figuring out all the information. And so that was one of my favorite parts about it, and talking to people and getting more pieces of information. And, it lent itself to a mystery to show how you put together a story. And where that different elements come from, and also I felt like I had been, you know, I think like you're young and you're ambitious, and like I think I had been led astray a few times or tricked, or you think you have all the information, then you don't have all the information, And with journalism, you know, it's, I was so ambitious. There's like a rush to put things out, but, and you're competing with the other paper and all this stuff, but you might not have all the information. And then it lends itself to storytelling where the mystery, you can think it's done and then it's not done, and you can think it's done and then it's not done, mm-hmm. which I always enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So this, the central crime in this story, did this come out of your, was this a totally made up thing, or was there some inspiration from real life in it, if you can say?
Yeah, I mean, Hannibal Lecter was a huge inspiration. Yeah. I wanted to write something with a Silence of the Lambs type, like French relationship between a reporter and a killer. I was pitching it originally as like lesbian Hannibal. And then people were like, I'm listening. And then there was a something that happened to a reporter at the Globe when I was there, where there was a killer who was behind bars and wouldn't talk to anyone, wouldn't talk to the police. And then she just randomly went to go speak to him, and he confessed the entire crime to her. I remember her coming into the, because I'm like sitting in the little intern bullpen, and I remember her coming into the offices, and everyone being like, she became like the spectacle, and everyone was like wanting to interview her, and she was a little bit shaken up, and I was like, I just remembered that and how weird that was, and why did he choose her? The idea at the time was that she spoke Spanish and he spoke Spanish, and so the even though I'm sure cops spoke to him in Spanish, there's something where she approached him at first in the first meeting speaking Spanish, and I think he just started talking and spilled everything, I think, because he felt some sort of kinship to her because they were both speaking Spanish. That was my impression of it at the time. She was also a young woman. Like, there might have been something to that, I don't know, but that story always stuck with me as how wild that was. And she was like a kind of a seasoned, like, hired reporter, so I was like, what if that happened to an intern?
What would happen?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really some like mind hunter psychological.
I love mind hunter. Yeah.
So good. I'm so sad it's not coming back.
I loved Mind Hunter. I can't believe it. I followed the lesbian love interest, the Anna Torv's like girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I followed her immediately. I was like, hello. Mm-hmm. Hi there. Yes.
Absolutely.
I will thirst follow you right now.
Indeed. Yeah, no, it's so good. But yeah, it makes you think about, like, why would a criminal pick this person? What is it about them that gets them to talk?
Yeah.
It's really a fascinating idea.
And why? And he also, like, he had murdered his kid. And that was part of it. And that was inspiration for the book as well. Like, how much it's so crazy to hear about parents murdering their children. Like, that was part of the inspiration, too, was these sort of stories of, like, the parent just killing the kid. But I was like, it'd be interesting. Well, I don't want to spoil, but I'd be like, it'd be interesting to have to deal with someone telling you that. And like, because you can excuse kind of, okay, maybe the husband was abusive, I don't know. But like, parents killing their kids, I was like, how do you, that's something that like is so like intense. So.
Yeah, it just seems unimaginable.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Why would.
That's why there's.
Why would someone want you to think they did that?
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I mean, people like Diane Downs cover it up. They try to make it seem like they don't. So
which one's that?
Oh, sorry. Diane Downs is is it like the 90s? I want to say maybe it was a little earlier than that. But she shot her kids in the car and in their car and then tried to make it look like.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. Yeah, she said that she got robbed or something like that, or like carjacked, and
yeah.
And then it came out finally that it was her.
Yeah, there's like ton. I mean, the one that I always think of is Andrea Yates, And so the it was like kind of, I mean, my brain picks and chooses little things and little crime things I've seen and like kind of, and I also was like, what if there was this also, do you guys remember the mystery, the Clark Rockefeller story?
No.
Oh my God. So I was in Boston working at the Globe when this happened, and that was a big inspiration too. This guy, it started where this guy, it was like he was having a custody dispute with his wife and he had kidnapped his daughter. Mm-hmm. That was the story. And so everyone was like, Amber Alert, the daughter's been kidnapped, close all the ports, he has a boat, like who knows. Then they caught him and he was like going to the boat. And his name was Clark Rockefeller. And they were like, he's like a Boston high society guy. He's probably related to the Rockefellers. Right. Then they figure out that that wasn't his name. He was like some other guy. And he had changed his name to Clark Rockefeller, come to Boston to like make, because like didn't never said he was related to the Rockefellers, but just had that as his last name. Married up into like this big high society thing, pretended he was high society. And so then it was like, oh my God, that's crazy. He's a con man. Then it turned out he was like wanted for some murders in Germany.
Ugh.
And then they exhumed like the swimming pool of the house he used to live at, found the bodies. Like it was like it kept unfolding. Oh. And so they made a TV movie about it with Eric McCormick. But anyway, so
I'm just gonna look at this up later. Rockefeller.
So that story was happening in Boston while I was living there. We watched that, or like when I was working at the Globe, we watched that slowly unfold, a new part of the mystery, a new part of the mystery, a new part of the mystery, leading to he was the serial killer. And it was so wild. And so that's part of why like the Dahlia is Dahlia Kennedy. Where she moves to Boston and she chooses the last name Kennedy. She never says she's a Kennedy. But if you live in Boston and your last name's Kennedy, you can kind of assume.
Yeah.
So she's a little bit of a rip on Clark Rockefeller.
Oh, that's so fun. Yeah. I like that. Oh, goodness. Is Dahlia a reference to the Black Dahlia? Or is it just... Okay, cool. Yeah. Great.
Well, my editor, too. My editor on the project is named Daphna. She's like a friend of mine now too. And so it was kind of like a Black Dahlia and also like using a name with D-A, like Daphna. I don't know. I was just kind of, things merge. Like my brain works in like weird mergy ways.
Oh, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. It's always, I mean, you know, the old cliche of write what you know, like there's something to it. There's there's a lot of, you know, really interesting detail that can be pulled from things that are like deep in your brain.
I'm kind of constantly like these stories at the Globe happened so long ago, but I remember that, like, you know, like you kind of are constantly taking stuff from real life, filing it in your little brain filing cabinet and be like, I'll use that sometime. I'll use that for later. I'll use that for something. And then the opportunity comes up and you're like, here we go. Great. Like, here's all the stuff. I didn't remember a lot of stuff. And we were brainstorming. Daphna, we were going through, like, what could happen. And I was like, I would say, oh, what about this? And she'd be like, whoa, that's wild. How'd you think of that? And I would just go, Google, and show her that it, like, something like it had actually happened while I worked there. And she was like, what the fuck?
That is so much fun. Things you don't even remember that you remember until until it comes.
What was it like working with an artist? Because you'd done like, you know, you're a writer, so you've written by yourself. But what was it like trying to find a look and feel for the book with the people that do the drawing and the art and everything?
Daphna gave me the options of different artists and... we talked about Claire Rowe, who ended up doing it, her style and the way that it could be like noir. And then Miguel Muerto, who did the coloring, was also given to me by Boom to be like, he does kind of like dark shading and we want it to be a lot of blues and purples. And he lives in Mexico, I believe, and Claire lives in Scotland. So we've never met. We were all working together, like, internationally, which is cool.
Yeah.
We, like, did this book together, like, not ever meeting. And I like when I can hand my script off, or I can hand my stuff off and someone better than me can make it better. Like,
yeah.
I don't ever, like, I don't claim to be a director. Like, I write, you know, there's, like, I think some people who are very controlling of their work, and I'm sort of like, I've done my part. My part was the words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now we give it to the person who does the drawing. Mm-hmm. Now we give it to the person who does the color. Like, I'm not precious about, like, controlling. Like, I'm like, I want to see what your vision is for this. Like, I've done my vision. What's your vision? What's your vision?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, like, I like collaborating, and but it was funny because you don't believe that you have opinions on things till you see it. So, like, they'd be like, what color should her outfit be? And I'm like, I don't care. And then they give me the page, and I'm like, why the hell is her skirt yellow? And they're like, what, you didn't tell us? And I'll be like, well, now I have feelings about it. Like, you give the character descriptions, and then they show you the drawing, what they think. And I was like, yeah, whatever, like, do whatever. And then when, you know, they would show it to me, and I'd be like, you know, there was some stuff where I think, Claire originally had Madison as, like, very thin and willowy, and I was like, no. Mm-hmm. Like, she needs to have, like, a human body. Or, like,
I really noticed that. That was really, really wonderful to see, because she has a human body, as you said, and it's so underrepresented, or has been so underrepresented historically, that it was, like, really...
Yeah. I just was like, really she's shorter and a little chunkier, because mm-hmm. you, mm-hmm. as a reporter, you're eating garbage. You're not, like, doing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shoving a burger in your mouth while you go, like, so, yeah. And then, you know, there were certain things that, I was like, no, she's wearing this at this time, or she's changed, you know, like, a little, but there was some fun stuff that Claire put in, like, Claire has her wearing the "This is what a feminist looks mm-hmm. like" t-shirt. Like, I didn't draw that. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, there's some fun stuff that I was like, oh, that's cool. That's good that you did that. And there was, like, I've told this before, but with the sex scenes with, I don't want to say spoilers, but anyway.
That's okay. Yeah.
Are you allowed to spoil it?
Yeah, we review it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, we're going to...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
you're just going to spoil it before we do. That's
fine. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, with the, with the sex scene with Lexi, the, there was, like, she drew it initially one way, which I think would, in your mind, when you would, it's just, like, an unconscious kind of... because Lexi is more masculine and mm-hmm. and Maddie's more feminine. So it was drawn with, like, Lexi on top and stuff. Because, like, I guess that's just, like, it was, like, a subconscious thing. And sure. I got to give my favorite note ever, which I wrote back, no, the butch is the bottom. and I was like, I'm trying to provide representation here. Because yeah. I just think subconsciously that's how you would just draw it if you weren't thinking. Mm-hmm. And, like, of course, you know, whatever. And so it was fun. Like, it was fun to give notes, and it was fun to be like, I didn't even realize I had opinions about half this stuff until I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. So what was your outline like? Was it more like a script?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay.
I mean, Claire and Miguel did such a wonderful job. It's so beautiful. I didn't know how to write a comic book script. Like, yeah. I had no idea. I wrote it as a regular script. And I turned it in, and Daphna was like, Daphna Plebin from Boom was like, So when you say she picked up the phone, we don't have that. So you have to write, she's holding the phone. The phone is at her ear. Like, each panel is going to look different. So it's stagnant. So instead of saying, like, you know, instead of being like, I'm like this, the scene is her picking up the phone. You have to be like, panel one, her hand is on the phone. Panel two, the phone is at her ear. panel three. Because I even like stuff that you would think is so easy, like she sighs. Okay, well, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. Is she intaking the air in the panel or is she exhaling the air in the panel? Like very, so we had to go through and, like I had the script, but we had to go through and like, I just didn't think about it. Like you write. And so it was such an interesting, weird process because you would go through the script and you would say, okay, page one is this part. Page two is this part. And then you would have to choose what is going to convey what's happening. Like even if you're like, she runs, it's like, is she in the middle of the run? Is she arriving? Mm-hmm. So that was a whole new experience. I had never written anything that way.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any idea how to even start on that. That's amazing because I've never seen anything like that. You just see the book and it's so, but yeah, that level of detail, that's fascinating.
Yeah,
that's
wonderful. I was so not used to that. And it's funny because like right after this, I wrote an Audible original, so a narrative audio podcast.
Oh.
And that is a whole different thing because then you can't write anything that people can't see. Right. So then that was like writing a script again, but writing a script now with the like boundary of no one can see them. It's like these weird exercises I've been doing for like a year where it's like, okay, now write a script where every frame has to be described. Okay, now write a script where no one can see the person. Like, you know what I mean? And I haven't written like a movie script in a while because I've been working on these projects. So now I've written these very weird like writing exercise experiments that I've been doing for like the last year.
Does it make you think about, like, does writing something like a graphic novel make you think about writing a novel or even a movie script differently?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, the first two books that myself and my podcast partner wrote were mostly written in emails and text messages.
Nice.
Sometimes in like fake scripts or fake articles. So that was fun because it was like mostly dialogue and like quirkiness and quips back and forth. And then I wrote a book called Bad with Money, which was like a memoir. And so that was like researching my own past and history and interviewing people, and which was like basically a book of journalism. It was interviews and research and stuff like that. And research into my own self, reading my old diaries and stuff. But and interviewing my parents and my grandmother who passed away. Thank God I interviewed her before she died because interview is she's quite a person. So, you know, that was very different. For now, for writing, I feel like, I would be a lot more visual about it. And I haven't really thought about it, but I think, a lot of it is written in sort of these frames of like, okay, what are we seeing? Mm-hmm. And also, I think like I would be more interested. I think I've always been more interested in like dialogue, like quippy dialogue. But I think like I just pitched on something and I was thinking more like visually about it and like what would it look like edited? What would the color scheme be? Because with Bury the Lead, we had to. I mean, I'm a writer. You don't ever really say what kind of moody colors would, you know, is it blues and purples and yellows and so then you have to start thinking that way of like what's the mood coloring of this page, which with comics, it's so different. Like it really matters like what colors you're using to set a tone, and you notice that in films too, right? Like there's a big difference between a Tarantino movie and like a Sofia Coppola, which has like light pinks and light blues and beiges. And they write, but those are both auteurs, but you know what I mean? Like it's like, what's the vibe of this?
Yeah.
And with noir too, there's a vibe kind of like historically.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Was this always a graphic novel? Did you like receive an ask to write a graphic novel, or did you have this idea and it turned into this?
No, in 2016, I started dating this woman who works at Boom.
Okay.
And
oh, I see, Gabby. I see how this
happened. I know. I know. So I was dating this woman who worked at Boom, and she had written one of their most popular comics. And so we were like, she was kind of like, have you ever thought about writing a graphic novel? And then I met her coworker, who was Daphna. Mm-hmm. And we started chatting, and then I pitched them probably like four or five different things. Mm-hmm. And they were like, I don't know. And then, which is fair. And then we started talking about my own history and my own past, and Daphna was interested in that. And I had also just been watching a lot of Hannibal. And so I was like, what about this? And that was what sparked it. But I pitched it, and then it took, like, I sent them the pitch, completely forgot about it. Like 8 months go by. And then out of the blue, Daphne's like, okay, so we're ready to start on this. And I was like, what? Like, what did I say? Like, completely forgot. Because the process for things in entertainment is so slow.
Oh, yeah.
So, like,
it's really true.
I don't know. She edits a lot of stuff. So I think she just, like, put it on the back burner, was busy, and then all of a sudden was like, anyway. So it's a lot of, like, wait, go, go, go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it took... I mean, that was 2016. We started working on this in like 2018. Mm. So it was like a long process, and I pitched them other things that they were like, nah. And so I pitched them something, and then it also sucks because like you'll pitch something and then you'll realize. So I like pitched them something, and then they were like, that's Westworld. And I was like, it is Westworld. You are right. I have pitched you Westworld. So yeah, it took, but I read graphic novels and I loved graphic novels, and I wanted to, and then me and the other person had broken up, but on friendly terms. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, by the time, and now I like love Boom. I have a wonderful relationship with them, but it took a few tries. It mm-hmm. took a few pitches for them to be like, that's the one.
I'm so glad they did.
Yeah, it was fun. I had never explored this biographical part of my life that people seem to be really interested in.
I mean,
it's yeah, it's weird. Yeah, I had never really written anything about it or really covered it, like I had never used it as inspiration for anything. So it was cool that they were like, wait, what? And then I got to, you know, explore that.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it gives a really fresh perspective on the mystery genre.
Thanks.
It's nothing like it has familiar touches, of course, to the mysteries that we like to read, but it also at the same time is like nothing I've ever seen before. So
thank
it's
you.
Really, yeah, yeah. I will give you a spoiler. I enjoyed it very much for our review portion.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You going to do another one?
Hmm. Yes, I hope so. I just talked to Daphna a little while ago.
Literally hours, if you can believe. We're getting a scoop.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. You are getting a scoop. Yeah, I just talked to her a week ago about an idea. She and I work really well together. Yeah. And we came up with something. We were like supposed to just be having a Zoom lunch, but then mm-hmm. we came up with something.
Oh, that's
and
lovely.
Then I, yeah. And then I, but you know, it is like throwing stuff out there, pitching, being like, maybe this, maybe that. And she's like, I don't know. But she knows what the people want. Like,
yeah,
she knows. So like, I defer to her. So I was like, what about, I kind of have ideas always like going. So like we were talking and she was like, well, I kind of want to do something like this. I'm really interested in editing something like this. And I had like, you know, a document that I had like a small idea that I had thought maybe I would pitch as a film somewhere. And like literally one sentence. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I had this kind of thing. And she was like, say more. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't have more, but I will start. I will start talking. And so then she was like, yeah, I like that. But it's like stuff you never know is the thing. Like I'll write down like one sentence ideas and then I'll just be like, maybe one day someone will say, hey, do you have anything like this? And I'll be like, in fact, I do, which has kind of served me well.
Yeah, that sounds really smart.
Thanks.
You never know what, because it's hard to know what of your own ideas are any good. You know?
Yes, I throw spaghetti at the wall. I'm very not precious. Like I'm like, what about this? And even like the one sentence thing that I gave her, we totally changed what it was gonna be. Like the one sentence I gave her was like, two girls are on like a supernatural TV show, and on Halloween the show becomes real, and they have to fight all these demons, and but they're just actresses, and they fall in love. That was what I said. Yeah, and she was like, okay, I like that. And then now what we came up with from that is totally different. But I was like, but that was just like a thing that I had been thinking of, like, you know, like Halloween Town meets Buffy meets, you know, whatever. And I don't know when I thought of that, like years ago. I don't know. But now it's like, so it's going to be something totally different that has nothing to do with Halloween. But but yeah, like it is, and I would never be like, that's my one idea. I hope they like it. I mean, I have no, I get really upset about rejection for sure. But also I'm like, you know, I didn't say, oh, boom, rejected my first three pitches. So fuck them. Yeah. I was like, I will keep trying. Yeah. How about this one? How about this one? Hey, sorry to bother you. How about this one?
Yeah, absolutely. That stubbornness and tenacity. Yeah. And it's certainly, I think, from all I know, is a really good way to have something work, to figure out what does work. And that's so neat. And clearly a lot of your ideas have and are wonderful and are continuing to.
A lot of them get rejected, though, let me tell you.
Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah. There's always going to be more of those. Yeah. Always. But yeah, I hope this isn't the last we've heard of Madison Jackson.
Same.
I know. Well, maybe. Yep.
We'll see.
Not in the graphic novel form, but maybe somewhere else.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah. There was a, you know, a page opened. For the possibility, I think.
Yeah.
Gabby, where can people find you and all of your work?
Sure. I'm at Gabby Rode on Instagram and at Gabby Dunn on Twitter. And there's, if you, I like people getting my books on IndieBound. So there's a few, one called I Hate Everyone But You, one called Please Send Help. Those are the YA books. One called Bad with Money, which is my financial memoir. And then Bury the Lead is out from Boom. And this is not a book, but I just had a thing on Audible Originals called Apocalypse Untreated that just came out. That's an Audible Original narrative podcast, so like audiobook type thing, if your listeners have Audible.
Yep. Audible.com/ADCpod.
And say the name of that one more time.
Apocalypse Untreated.
Apocalypse Untreated. Amazing. Is there anything that we didn't ask you that you want to say?
No, you guys did a great job. I hope that your listeners like Bury the Lead.
Yeah,
I hope so too. I really hope. I really hope that this opens their eyes to new possibilities, and we like to sprinkle a little variety in. And this is a great way to do that.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hey, everybody. It's me, your boy, the Saucy Sleuth. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for Gabby for taking time to talk about her graphic novel. We're on the Scavengers Network, ghostscavengersnetwork.com, and as of this recording, it is October 31st, 2020,
and spooky, it's a Halloween
Saturday. Yeah. So there's a lot of spooky stuff on Scavenge Network. There's Spooky Spouses. There's Insanely Haunted. There's also Myth Takes, which I believe has something to do with the paranormal.
And I think Historical Hotties has a spooky episode.
Yeah, I know they came out recently. Yeah, I think they have a new one as well as a bunch of others. So you can get your scary on there. If you're just horny for scares.
Or in the real world where everything is terrifying.
Yeah, turn to the news at any point. You could get merchandise. Someone did order one, and I wish I could track them down and thank them. But you can get order and method. It might have been my mother. I'll ask her.
Okay. I think that's all right.
Podcast. You can go to teespring.com/themill for a bunch of merchandise. You can check out the link below in the show notes. That has concluded my part of this ad break.
You can find us on social media at ADCPod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Again, that's at ADCPod. And also, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the pod. If you haven't done so already, it really helps us and boosts our visibility so that other people can find us. Yeah.
If you're looking to get more out of your Amateur Detective Club experience, head over to patreon.com/ADCPod. For as low as $1 a month, you can receive access to bonus episodes and content. And for even $10 a month, you can place an ad for yourself or business during the show, plus receive all previous perks. Visit patreon.com/ADCPod.
And is required by my parole officer every week. I must say butt soup. So, thank you, Rich Gilberto, for your contribution and for your butt soup.
Ew.
Yeah, I didn't like it either. Back to the show.
All right. So what you should do is you should buy Gabby Dunn's novel, graphic novel, Bury the Lead, and it's Burythelede.
And I want to mention something get into it.
Yes.
It is also graphic in as much as this is a book for adults. We try to keep it pretty PG here, but just as a heads up, it's a horny book and also a bloody book. It is definitely rated M for mature. Just like my favorite video game, Halo 3, starring the Master Chief. I don't know, man. This book follows a journalist.
It does.
Yeah. Named Madison.
Yes. Her name is Madison Jackson, which is the most Revolutionary War founding father name I've ever heard. I love it. But it starts off with a couple of other folks. There is a phone call, and it is a reporter calling a man and asking about a shooting that has just happened. And then you see this, it opened to this newsroom where this reporter is talking to an intern, which is Madison, it's either the editor of the newspaper or a different reporter.
You're talking about the old fella?
Yeah, the old fella.
Yeah, he's the editor in chief, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, it opens on this newsroom, and it's not clear to me from the beginning that it was about Madison. I didn't realize we were going to follow Madison when we first started. Okay. Yeah. It shows, you know, this breaking story is happening. There's been a shooting. And they're trying to figure out who's going to go out and see about the story, who's going to get the story. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard describing a graphic novel.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the exact opposite of what this thing was intended to be. Heard and not seen.
Yeah, no, seriously. But yeah, I mean, basically, Madison gets out there. She's the intern at this paper. She has a huge respect for Lexington Ford, also an amazing name, who is, you know, a really seasoned reporter, I suppose, at the Boston Lead. The name of the paper is the Boston Lead. So we're chasing this story. Essentially what's happened is the wife of a prominent man in the community seems to have shot her husband and her son is missing. She goes out to the crime scene and she sees that there is a reporter that she knows from the Trombone, which sounds like a slightly more, you know, tabloidy newspaper. Yes. Like, it's not like the National Enquirer, but it's also not, you know,
the New Yorker.
Right. Or the New York. Well,
these days.
These days.
It feels like kind of a pseudo BuzzFeed thing.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Like, you can get real news there, but it's not guaranteed.
But like, why would you? But yeah.
Right. Right.
And they're rival papers.
Yeah, for sure. There's a strong contempt between them. So at the scene, she meets a police officer that she's clearly encountered before, and he gives her a tip. He basically does it under the guise of like, I can't change the password on something on my phone. Can you look at it? And she's like, all right, you're like a few years older than me, but okay. And basically when she looks at it, he's given her a tip to follow. It says that, it's what tells her that the son is missing, and that there's a body that's been found. So she basically just goes to the jail where, first we meet her brother and his fiance who she lives with. And her brother works for the mayor of Boston. And we meet them and then what?
I don't know why, but I'm like, it never occurred to me that Boston had a mayor. I've never needed to think about the mayor of Boston before in my life. And then I was like, it's such a lawless town. Why would, it's amazing that they even have one.
I mean, we have one in New York.
Well, do we? But she basically goes to the jail and no one can get this person to speak. And then they're like, you might as well try everybody. Get in there, Madison. And then for whatever reason, what's her name?
Dahlia.
Yes, of course. Thank you. Dahlia opens up to Madison, partly because Madison says, I don't think you actually killed these people. And then she's like, no, I did. And here's how I did it. And I liked it. And she's like, ugh.
Yeah, it's really disturbing. She says, because up until now, we've only thought that the boy was missing. And she says that she killed her son and that she killed her husband. Yeah. And yeah.
And he had it coming.
He had it coming. Only had himself to blame.
Yes. But then she gets She's got the only scoop on this story, on this confession. So she runs with it. She does an interview. It blows up on Twitter and Facebook and all those places and online. And then she gets put on the case formally.
Yeah, pretty much. I believe that Lexi is writing mm-hmm. the actual stories.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But yes, it is very well known that Dahlia Kennedy has confessed to an intern at the mm-hmm. Boston Lead. And it's, you know, overshadowing the fact that she's a reporter is this attention on her, you know? It's right. like, mm-hmm. not what you actually want as a reporter. You don't want to be the story. You want to get the story. So she continues to get into this story, and she is also consulting with this police officer, who from the jump seems a little flirty and mm-hmm. not in a super gross way, to be clear. He is a man. And but no, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's not being like pushy or gross.
Right, right. It's just you can see that there's interest.
Yeah.
And you know, he asks her like if she's doing okay and whatnot, and you get the idea that he likes her, and she is super mm-hmm. mean to him.
Yeah.
She's super mean to him.
Well, admittedly, he's a cop.
Yeah, no. I mean, that is true.
So, like, go back to the trough, man. Like, yeah. Get out of my face.
Yeah. She even at one point makes a, you can see her thinking because they have, like, little text bubbles that are different from the speech bubbles. And it's her thoughts.
Yeah, and much like Garfield the cat.
Much like Garfield the cat. And it's like, why am I being so mean to him?
Yeah. Because you like him. You want to kiss him.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes home and her brother's like, hey, you're messing up my career with all this nonsense. And so there's tension there.
Yeah.
And then she talks to Jackson, to Kennedy again.
Yes.
And then she describes how she used to be an au pair for this man, her future husband, and then they fell in love and got married, and but it was mostly because she saw an opportunity, it feels like. And then she gives her a name.
Raquel Steve, Stife, not sure how to pronounce it.
Yes.
I believe Steve rhymes with teeth.
With teeth?
Teeth.
No, I know. Teeth. Hey, yeah, I'm mispronouncing it on purpose as a joke.
I don't understand this concept. I've never done that in my life.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
But Madison is like, I don't care about that. I care about what's going on here.
And she's like, she's going to be the Secretary of Education.
Yeah.
And Madison's like, that is not possible. This woman, while she may have been the superintendent of schools, is an idiot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's like, I don't know. I think she's going to be the Secretary of Education.
Yep.
But you can't talk about this. Just look into it. But don't give this to your reporter friend as a story.
Mm-hmm.
And
then she guesses how she disposed of her son's body, which is disturbing and terrible.
Yeah.
Then she goes back. I will say it is nice having the graphic. I have it open, and so I'm just going page by page. Okay, what happens next? That is actually really nice. She goes and she talks to Lexington, and they get a drink, and then they realize, oh, there's some interest there, it seems.
Oh yeah, there's subtle something where Lexington mentions that she's queer. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then she gives her number, and it's very, very fun. And then there's more trouble at home with her brother.
Yeah, basically the mayor is going to make some big announcement.
And then she goes to the office, and it turns out that Steve is going to be the Secretary of Education.
Now, I have a question about this.
Okay.
Does this woman, Steve, remind you of anyone?
You're talking about our current state, our current Secretary of Education in the country?
Yep, that's the one.
Though at least Steve actually had somewhat of an educational background.
Right, yes. She's very bad at it. So yeah, they're in the newsroom watching this announcement. And it's also saying that Mayor Yang, the woman for whom Madison's brother works, Mayor Yang is going to hold a congratulatory press conference for Steve. So immediately you see Madison go back to talk to Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how'd you know? How did you know? And yeah, basically we find out that her brother, Madison's brother, is sticking with Yang because she's, it says in the comic, she's the Asian American Obama. Mm-hmm. She's young, cool, idealistic, and you know, he thinks that he's going to get a good political job, and get to the White House. That she's going to get to the White House.
That she's young, idealistic, cool, and loves a drone.
But has the kind of vibe that people are inspired by.
Yeah.
So instead of really answering her questions, Dahlia Kennedy says to Madison another name, Ballard Charles. It's like, just look into Ballard Charles. I think you should do that. And she also mentions that she had a dialogue coach that was paid for by Raquel Steve. Like, they had been friends when she was married, when she was first married. And, you know, that Steve had been kind of her buddy. So she had a dialect coach, which is an interesting bit of information. And then we're back in the newsroom and we're having another chat with Lexi, and they decide to go out for another drink. They talk, she mentions that Kennedy had a dialect coach, so maybe she's not, you know, originally from America. And Lexi thinks she's going to check into that. And then gets real cute, and they end up going over to each other's, one of
Lexi's place.
To Lexi's place.
Yes. And get it on. Once again, this is a horny graphic novel.
Yes. There is a sex scene, and it's graphic.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's in graphics. It's not, like, particularly graphic. It's just, you know, it's there.
If anything, I would say it's, you know, not even that graphic. I mean, they do a really good job of being tasteful with the illustrations of it. There's no nipple.
I have nipple in mine.
They are artfully... Oh, in my book, there was none. Like, the hair would cover, or, like, you would see the breast, but you just wouldn't see nip and the printed copy I have.
Interesting. In the Kindle version, in which I can zoom in.
That's why.
Maybe that's it.
It's like, we already know you're using your devices for other things. We're going to just give you this one. And then she yaks with this police officer for a little bit, and then interviews, what's the name of this person again?
So she goes over to the Charles residence. She looks up Ballard Charles and who he is. He goes over to his fancy house, and he's a single dad, and his daughter answers the phone. And she, you know, Madison identifies herself as a reporter. And so Ballard Charles says, you know, come on in. And she's asking about a student who died by suicide in the school a couple of years ago, I believe.
Yeah, she jumped jumped down the stairwell, essentially.
But then his daughter gives Madison a book, a yearbook, and it's just a couple notes, and then there's drawings over devil horns over this guy Gus Keefe, who is a history teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With his eyes X'd out.
Yeah.
Because yeah,
dead.
Basically, Ballard Charles doesn't really want to talk, and the kid is like, here,
understand,
open this later. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we are back at the newsroom and we learn that Kennedy doesn't want to talk anymore. And they kind of hit a wall in the case and they really don't know what to do. Now, Kennedy has basically told Madison, hey, you cannot give any of this stuff to the paper at this point. Just look into it. Like, you can't give them the Steve information. You can't give them Ballard, Charles. Like, keep it to yourself. You look into it, but keep it to yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're very frustrated, but, you know, while Lexi is frustrated, she tells a little lie saying that she has to go do laundry for her brother and then immediately goes to Dahlia Kennedy. And she then tells a completely different story about the murder. She says that she came home and found her husband murdered. And she mentions the name Gus Keefe.
Mm-hmm.
And Kennedy is impressed. She's like, oh, his daughter must have talked to you, huh?
Yeah.
So, and, yes, go ahead.
And then she reconfirms how, what is her name? Died, the student.
Liv.
Liv died. And, yeah, because they'd given some excuse of like, oh, she was depressed. And he's like, no, neither of them believe that. She goes and talks to Lexi about being her date to her brother's wedding.
Yeah.
Right.
And Lexi is like, I'm technically your boss. No, I think that would be a bad look. And so she goes to the cop.
Yeah.
Whose name he has one.
Dominic.
Yeah, Dominic.
Thank you. And so she asks him to go with her, and he's like, sure. And then she does some digging on the middle school where Gus Keefe works and all of that, and to try and figure out what the relation is to that. And then she has a weird sexy dream.
Oh yeah,
about Kennedy, which choice. And then she confronts Keefe and he physically assaults her when she asks questions, and that's not great. So
yeah,
there's clearly something going on with him. He does unfortunately look like Clint McElroy.
Yeah, he really does. Oh my goodness. He really, truly does.
Which is unfortunate with what they do with this character, but
yeah, he pushes her down the stairs. She's yeah. Okay, but my goodness.
Yeah, not great. Yeah. Not yeah. Great.
He does not want to talk.
No. Then she goes to the wedding. She and Dominic share a kiss. After they're both like, we're both bisexual, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lexi sends Madison a text about the autopsy. And the stabbing was post-mortem. And she's like, did you know about this, Dom? And he's like, yeah, I'm a detective. And she's like, why didn't you tell me? It's like, I'm a detective.
Yeah, like, I couldn't. Like, this is not my thing to tell. But she gets pretty mad about it and kind of runs off in a huff while still wearing her dress that she wore to her brother's wedding. She sits down and talks with Kennedy some more to be like, mm-hmm. Which, by the way, this woman seems to be available for interviews, like, just whenever.
Well, what else does she have to freaking do?
I know, but, like, yes.
Madison goes back to work, and then one of the senior reporters is like, don't just stop thinking about Steve and Keefe. But then she goes to her detective friend, Dom, and asks, do you got any information about Kennedy? And it turns out that she's from
France. Yes.
And she murdered people there?
Yes.
Yeah. They say she's a person of interest in those murders.
Mm.
of her landlord, you know, much like in the
totally justified.
Oh, yes. Much like in the acclaimed novel Crime and Punishment. A fascinating bit of information. We got a nice picture of Kennedy kind of looking like a European.
European femme fatale.
Yeah. She has like a collar on and a headband and with a little like a tie, but it's like a bow, which for some reason reminds me of like the Madeline books, which might be wrong, but it reminds me of that.
Well, the house in the background is also covered in vines, and the people wheeling the bodies are all in a straight line. So, there you go.
Exactly.
So Madison demands a byline from Lexi, vis-a-vis her giving her any more information about the case, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. She's become drunk with power.
Then Dominic sends her some more information after she visits with the lady. I'm so sorry. I'm so bad with names.
Dahlia.
It's just not sticking. I can't tell you why. despite it being a famous murder case. And then she meets with somebody, right?
Well, what Dahlia gives her is a routing number. For a bank.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And she's like, listen, this is what I can tell you. And they have like a stare down. It's great. They're both peering at each other with angry eyes. It's like, listen, just look into this, this routing number and you'll learn all about it. So she gives the routing number to Dominic. And gets a text back from him saying that it's someone named Ellen Worley to Ballard Charles. And then they find some more information, and it's supposed to be a nanny's salary. The nanny is supposed to have sent this money, and it's like, no, that doesn't sound. That doesn't sound right. That money was from Steve.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And she tracks down another name, right? After that?
Well, she goes to the person at the trombone.
Janie.
Yeah.
Tyler coming in here with all the names.
Yes, Tyler's so good with names. And
How do I do that? Teach me, please.
Some people just got it and some people don't, Tristan.
Well, I want it.
Maybe I was born with it. Maybe it's Maybelline. Who knows?
Yeah. Janie Lou. She learns...
Jameline.
Sure. So she learned that... that Janie, the trombone reporter, was best friends with Liv.
Also, the trombone. Is that supposed to be like a nod to the Daily Bugle, you think?
Yeah.
Oh.
Has to be, right?
Oh, now I'm thinking about bugles, though. Love those little guys. Love to eat a bugle on a Thursday.
Oh, like the chip and not the musical instrument.
Yes.
Yeah, the puffed snack that you can wear on your hands like claws.
Or like a witch. Happy Halloween, once again. I like to put them on my forehead and pretend I'm Mr. Tumnus. That's what I like to do with a bugle every Thursday.
That's really what you should be sending to your patrons, Tristan.
Do you want to see me masquerading as a satyr?
Well, for just $1 a month.
You can receive a horny goat pic directly to your phone. Call 555.
Horny.
1-800. It's a horny me.
Yep.
Okay. So she... the person from the trombone. Yes. And she gives the name of a teacher, right?
Yeah.
So she tracks down this teacher, Linda Scrimshaw.
Yes.
And she's out at karaoke. And so she strikes up a conversation with her. And then she drugs her.
Yeah, she puts an Ambien in her shot. Basically, yeah. She gets the name of this teacher from Janie at the trombone. They're able to put their differences aside and, you know, join forces on this. And she gets this from her. And then she starts chatting with the teacher and buys her a shot and puts an Ambien in it.
Yep. And then she takes her home to make sure she gets home safe.
Yeah.
And then she gets the information that they transferred Keith.
Yep.
And yeah. And so...
Basically, what we've gotten is that Steve, the about to be Secretary of Education, takes any teachers that have been doing shady things and transfers them to special ed, which is real bad. Like, yeah. That super sucks. 150 teachers so far and counting from her research. And this is where she's doing this research, and she has like takeout next to her and whatnot. And this is where she's wearing her, this is what a feminist looks like shirt. Cute. Yeah, it's great.
Also, it should be noted that none of these teachers have the qualification requirements to teach special education.
Exactly. So then they go to visit Micah. She and Janie go to visit Micah at a soccer game and have a chat with her. And that their family was paid off to keep quiet about it. And, you know, it's absolutely horrifying. And she's like, please just don't judge my father. Like, he's just trying to give me, you know, a home and doesn't know what to do, and you know, or we're just deep in this thing at this point.
And then Steve shows up at the office to confront Madison.
Yeah.
And she's like, don't, just stop this, please. Just stop this line of an inquiry, and that's it. And
right, yeah, basically, it's not a full on threat, but it's just like it's
about the implication.
It's an implied
implication.
Yeah, so she's talking about this with her police officer friend, and saying, and he's like, yeah, so she is threatening you, and she's like, okay, I mean, this is all very interesting, but it's just not quite adding up. And he says, listen, go back and talk to Dahlia Kennedy. And she's like, all right, here's what's happened. Please just be straightforward with me. And Lexi, she says, have Lexi say that I have run that I'm confessing to the murder of my landlords. And she's like, are you? She's like, yeah, I am, I guess. So she says, listen, the oldest child of Raquel Steef was sexually molested by his 10th grade English teacher, and Steef sent the guy to special education. And you should go talk to him. She's like, her own son, really? Yep, she is a special kind of terrible. So they go, she and the police officer, Dominic, go to interview her son, who is at what looks like a halfway house or a rehab facility, or he doesn't, what does it say?
I'm pretty sure it's a rehab facility.
Oh, it is, yes, it is a rehab facility. Thank you. So they're just chatting with him, and he's like, I can't give up my mom, but yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. And my little brother's nanny is named Catherine, and now Catherine was working for Dahlia Kennedy. She's Henry's nanny. So this person was, this nanny was having an affair with both Raquel Stief and with Dahlia Kennedy. Mm-hmm. So it's just all sorts of scandalous, lots of people having motives for killing this family. Now, we're worried that there's like a personal vendetta over Catherine, between, you know, Dahlia and Raquel, who could be jealous, trying to compete for her attention. He asks her to come forward. The police officer asks the son to come forward, and he's like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I will. So they're trying to get these photos so that Dugan, the son, doesn't have to testify. And there's emails back and forth. It's like, please leave me alone. And finally, the photos, he sends over the photos.
From there, that's when she decides to, she goes back to the office, right? Or the bullpen?
Yeah.
And I don't exactly remember what happens here. I know the trombone breaks the news with Janie's byline, but I don't remember why she went to them instead of her publication.
Yeah.
I think it's because Dahlia said, you can't run the story. Yeah. So I believe it's to cover up that.
And also, she goes over to Dominic's office and spills his coffee to distract him while she steals his file on Dugan Stief.
Mm-hmm.
So she has that now, mm-hmm. completely breaking his trust. And then, she goes back to the bullpen, and Lexi is now very frustrated that she's been holding off, basically been holding off because of her brother. And they're having, like, a big discussion that, like, can we please run this story? We have evidence. And, yeah, they're holding off, and then the trombone breaks the story. And everyone is now mad at Madison. So Lexi says, you've thrown parts of my story to the trombone. Dave sends her a text saying, screw you, in more mm-hmm. colorful language. And she's basically now covering for Janie, defending Janie and saying, listen, you know, Lexi, she scoops you all the time. You're a good reporter. It's a compliment, right? And she's like, nah, that's not really it. I really don't think that you're making me feel better with this. So finally, Dahlia Kennedy has asked to see Lexi herself. And Lexi is able to print a big story with the headline, Kennedy admits son is still alive in hiding. Socialites lie, bought time for escapade after husband's murder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she did kill her landlords because they were distributing child pornography. She's like, listen, yeah, I stabbed them. Don't feel bad about it. So I came here, and what happened was I changed my name and I married this guy. And then I came back and realized that my husband had been killed, and then I had to hide my son and make it look like it was me so that they wouldn't come after my son, essentially. So she stabbed her husband post-mortem. And so now that has all... And sent her son away with the nanny. So they have disappeared and no one will ever find them, but she has to, even though she didn't do the murder, she has to face charges for, you know, desecrating a corpse and whatnot.
Right.
But she also tells Madison, like, listen, this was never, you're not special. Like, I didn't tell you this because, you know, because Madison's like, why me? And she's like, listen, you were just, I was just using you. It was just a random thing. So, the mayor is resigning and not running for the presidency anymore. And her brother is super mad at her. And everybody hates Madison now, but she's, and she goes back to the newspaper and Lexi has quit. And all of the interns, it's their last day. Everyone's leaving and clearing out. But Mr. Flaherty, the guy who runs the paper, says, hey, Madison, you start today. You're one of us now. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was a little hard for me to follow.
Okay.
When you were counting it, and like Gabby was saying, like, there's a million things that lead to other things. It's a very realistic, I think, because, you know, of her personal experience, view of a journalist. And sometimes that gets confusing because the job's confusing because you're following a million leads. And so by the time I'd gotten to the end of it, I had to like reread certain things just to clarify. Luckily, like, since it's not a novel, it does not take that long to do it.
Right.
I think that the art design is absolutely beautiful. We were talking off mic of, I think Boom produces some of the best graphic novels that are currently in publication. They're constantly doing great work. I'm a big fan of what they do. So the art design and the all of that was 100% wonderful. I do like how we get into the morally gray area of this character. She is not a good person, but she is the protagonist, which is very noir and very fun, I think. And you understand where she's coming from, specifically as a young person, which I also liked to... I think there are pieces of media that have representations of like young 20-somethings that are not particularly good.
Yeah.
Because people have a hard time like remembering what that was like.
Sure.
Whereas like there's this kind of undertone of listlessness yet trying, you know, trying very hard and that sort of thing. I think I would give it probably 7.58. I'd read it again, but it's not my favorite. And we've talked about this before. I'm a huge fan of detective fiction, not necessarily procedurals and noir. I love, like, now here's the thing. If it was one in a series, I think I would like it more. If you got to really know Madison and her quirks and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this a million times, and I think that that really would have changed how I feel about it. I would also say I did not get my hands on a copy, a physical copy. Had I been reading it physically, I think I would have enjoyed it more. I really do enjoy, specifically with comic books, there's something that is so important about seeing it in person and really being able to look at each panel and really seeing it clearly. For me at least, there's something that is so different about that. And I'm going to try and get my hands on a physical copy eventually, because I would like that for me personally.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was beautifully rendered and interesting story, but I had to go back in places.
Okay. For me, it was 6.5. I liked that there was a lot of LGBTQ+ representation in the story. It felt way too short for me. I felt like we got some interesting ideas and some interesting characters that we never really, you know, got fleshed out. So I wish there was just more content. I wish we got to know a little bit more about why she does the things that she does and the way that she does them.
Mm.
What is her actual relationship with her brother? Like, is the relationship just him always yelling at her? You know, like, we just don't get fully rounded characters in this story. So that kind of bummed me out, because I think there were the beginnings of a lot of really interesting, fun things, but we just didn't get the time spent on them. You know, it's a very, very short book.
Yeah. No, it was. It was very short. And yeah, it does certainly leave you wanting more. What I think I was having trouble with were the transitions.
Mm.
And then I was struggling with I could have used a little bit more of an introduction. I realize now that you're saying you wanted to know more about the characters, Tyler. I think that I needed a little bit more of an intro. And it's cool that they start out like with this, you know, very intense phone call and whatnot. And I did like that. But like just a little bit more intro would have been nice. Even if it was, you know, the first page happened exactly as it did, and then we went to an intro. And we kind of do. It's just the way it's structured, it was a little unclear as to who I should be following at first, as I mentioned. Some of the transitions I kind of struggled with and had to go back and kind of see how that got threaded together. But the content of the story and the characters I thought were great. I loved the illustrations. And I mean, truly, the illustrations are gorgeous and the coloring is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very clear tonally. The tone is like really, really well established. And at the end of my Kindle book, it's like, there's a lot of progress of, you know, how the characters were drawn, and it's really cool.
Yes.
It's really cool to see.
Yeah.
But what I'm going to give it an 8.5. I think it's great. I think it just needs a little bit more in terms of the intro and the transitions.
Yeah. And so I think our main critique is that we want more of this, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
You know? Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But a good time. I think our listeners certainly should check it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really great. Mm-hmm. It's a fun read.
Yeah. And all of Gabby's stuff is very fun, and highly recommend checking out what she does. And also, hey, guess what? She was on my other podcast. So if you want to hear her talking about her mental health, you can do that at Positive and Negative. She was great, very open, very warm as a person during that interview. I really appreciate it. How candorous she was. That's a real word, but we don't use it.
Is it really?
Yeah. Full of candor. Okay. Yeah.
Oh. Huh. I like that. It's a good word.
Mm-hmm.
And next time on Amateur Detective Club, we return to Agatha Christie's Poirot, Season 6, Episode 2, Hickory Dickory Dock.
Oh boy.
Miss Lemon persuades Poirot to investigate a series of apparently minor thefts in a university hostel. But simple kleptomania soon turns to baffling homicide.
Yes! She's back.
I have heard such good things about this one.
Yeah.
Not to hype it up too much, but some of our Instagram followers were telling me it was their favorite. I'm
excited as well. In the Facebook groups we're a part of, they won't shut up about this one. So.
Yeah. All right.
I now call this meeting of the Amateur Detective Club to a close.
Gavel sound.
Spooky, scary. Boys becoming men. men becoming wolves.